Hello and welcome to Doing the Opposite, Business Disruptors. Today, I'm really excited to be introducing a good friend of mine, David Drake, who lives in Brazil. And David is going to tell us some of the incredible stories that he's endured during his journey. And on that note, hello, David.
Well, hello, Jeff. Thank you so much for inviting me. I appreciate it. And I just want to say that I enjoyed your book very much. I have it here and I've read it once and I've gone back to it on different parts of the book on different occasions and reread some pertinent chapters. So very interesting book.
Great stuff. Thank you. And I appreciate that feedback. It's been amazing how much great feedback I've got. So I appreciate that, David. Let me hand over to you now and you can sort of do the talking because I'm really fascinated to hear what you've got to say today. So just sort of spend a couple of minutes sort of setting the scene. Who is David? And then sort of take us through that journey.
Okay, very good. Well, I am Irish through my father. I'm American because I'm American born. And I've lived in South America for most of my life. I'm 59 years old and I've lived in Brazil for 35 years. And I had the opportunity when I was younger to have lived in Europe and to have lived in the United States. But I chose Brazil as the country where I would develop my personal and professional life as an adult.
It sounds fascinating because, as you know, I'm quite excited about the prospect of visiting Brazil. So, again, it just enlightens that fascination I've got with your story. So sort of take us through the journey of where something material has happened that's either been a game changer for you or you've done the opposite or anything that sort of formats the theme of the podcast.
Okay, well, like I said, having read your book, it was very interesting because I was really inspired by the what you said about your father and what he did when he was bringing you up as a young boy and what he did doing the opposite. And I reread that actually two times. That was one of the parts that I did go back to. What I understood is that he was doing the opposite because he was looking at the long term. He was looking at the big picture. And that for him was doing the opposite. And I've also done that in my life. I mean, I'm a pretty conventional, conservative person. I'm not speaking politically. I'm just talking about my personal life. So you would think, well, David's not the type of person that's doing things the opposite or has not done things the opposite during the course of his life. I mean, I don't make a point of doing everything the opposite all the time. However, I do have this long-term vision like your father had. And in that sense, I think it's helped me in many different ways. And different ways that I've done the opposite is that, as I mentioned, I lived in Europe and I lived in the United States, and I had the opportunity to live in both countries. I had, you know, citizenship in both those regions of the world. But I chose to come to Brazil because, and this was doing the opposite, was because I saw Brazil as a land of the future, as a developing country, where I felt that Europe and the United States, it was more stagnant. And at the time, friends, family couldn't believe that I was choosing to leave opportunities that I had in North America and in Europe and coming down to South America. So I think as a young man, when I was in my early 20s, that was the first thing that I did, which would be doing the opposite. And it was a good decision for me because 35 years in living in this country, I've been able to develop my family, my friends, my community, my reputation, my business. I'm not saying that I wouldn't have been able to do all those things in Europe and in the United States, but it has been fun and exciting to do them here.
That's an interesting point as well, because, I mean, when you think about your family that would have said, oh, my God, what are you doing? And yet here you are 35 years later, having presumably little or no regrets. And although you obviously chose to move into South America, you still stayed in contact with the USA. I know you recently took your daughter over to university and you're obviously engaged with people like me in Europe. So you're still keeping very solid ties in those other countries.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, I really respect and love Europe and the United States. But I do feel that the opportunities for me are in South America and Brazil specifically.
So in terms of your career, your business, you obviously run a huge cleaning chemical manufacturing organization in Brazil. Yeah, what's happened during your career where you could actually put your finger on doing something materially different or doing it the opposite?
That's an excellent question. And when I came here in the early 20s and I was working, I started working, and the company I was with was a very, very small company, and we had no structure. And I remember going to a presentation by a famous economist, and he was also Minister of Finance here in Brazil, and he's currently a congressman. And he said that Brazil should change their name. It should not be called Brazil anymore. It should be called Belinda. And why did he think that it should be called Belinda? Because in his mind, Belgium was a first world country, so that's Belgium. And India was a third world country, so that would be India, Belinda. And he said the informal economy was the India of Brazil was much larger than the formal part of the economy. And I remember that a lot of companies would focus their business on the informal part of the economy. And I focused my efforts and my business on the formal part of the economy. And in that sense, I always crossed all my T's and dotted all my I's. And that came at a significant financial expense. It came at a significant effort to be able to do that because, you know, this is a very bureaucratic country. And so a lot of people would say to me, why would you want to do this? I mean, it's just going to cost you more heartache, more money. But I always thought of crossing all your T's and dotting all your I's and making sure you're in the formal economy. You have that foundation where the Belgian part of Brazil becomes stronger and stronger and the India part of Brazil become smaller and smaller, I will automatically be in a position to grow and take advantage of that because of the foundation. So this was sort of doing the opposite because a lot of my contemporaries at the time did not think that. They were thinking short term. You know, what can I do to make money now? What can I do to take advantage of the situation now? Well, like what your father mentioned in his book, you know, what do I have to do to help Jeff become an adult 20 years from now? And not, you know, how do I react to the situation immediately? And so, like I said, I was very inspired by that one chapter when you talked about your father, because I could see that
long-term,
you know,
approach,
there's definite lessons there.
Of course, yeah. And again, that was what was one of the things that drove me to produce the book, because it was a recognition and realization of how he truly did do the opposite to what everybody around him was doing. And yeah, I found that fascinating as well. And I found it fascinating
because he was thinking long-term.
Of course.
He was thinking long-term.
But more importantly, it also explained and helped me understand why I do the things I do, because I had no idea why I always behaved completely opposite to everybody else. And that helped me understand it. So, that's fantastic. So, David, the other thing that's the audience would be interested in is sort of tell us a little bit about what you do and your business, and also your involvement in the trade association that you've been involved with for many, many years.
Okay. Well, I work for a cleaning company. We make cleaning products. And as you can imagine, with the pandemic at the start of, you know, March 2020, cleaning products became an essential item. And so we had decisions to be made at that time in the end of March. And at the same time, I was president of the Brazilian Cleaning Association. So everybody was hunkering down when the pandemic began. And I did the opposite by working more. So like I mentioned, I'm 59 years old, and I probably never worked so much in my life as I have during this pandemic as of March. And not only because of the company, I mean, we were working two shifts before the pandemic. Once the shift began, the pandemic began, we went to three shifts. We invested a lot of money in the factory to increase productivity, to increase efficiencies. Nobody was investing in those first few months of the pandemic, and we did quite a bit. We were hiring people. Of course, we put in all the necessary safety protocols, and we were doing everything we could, but we were working around the clock. We were at the beginning, before we got all of our investments up and running, we were working 7 days a week. So that was doing things differently. Nobody else was working in April, May, June, July, and we never stopped. And then another thing that I did the opposite was the trade association. Our trade association, similarly, was very active during the whole period of the pandemic. We were developing all sorts of material on procedures, cleaning procedures for different areas, retirement communities, hospitals. We were doing lots of interviews. We were doing webinars. We did a virtual trade show, which nobody else did. No other sector did. And our sector had a virtual trade show, which we had over 10,000 attendees. And simultaneously with the trade show, we had a Congress. So that was very motivational for our market. It provided a lot of necessary information for the whole
community, services community, yeah.
Not only community, but the whole channel, the manufacturers, the distributors, the contract cleaners, and even the whole facilities market. And so we facility management market. So we did develop a relationship with Abrafaki. Our association, our cleaning association, is called Abralimp, the Brazilian Association for Cleaning. But we developed a relationship with Abrafaki, which is the Brazilian Facility Management Association, and together we had a trade show. And so the Facility Management Association was very interested about cleaning. I don't want to preach to the choir, you being the choir, on the importance of, you know, facility management. But, you know, as you know, you've concentrated more on hard facilities, and we concentrate more on soft facilities. But the overall Facility Management Association was very, very, very interested in soft facilities because they wanted to get people back to work. So we've got a very good relationship with them as we move forward, and we're trying to strengthen our relationship and continue to develop new offerings in Abralimp. You know, one of the things we want to do is like an ISO of cleaning. Another thing that we want to do is continue to help the facility management market become more virtual, because I think, you know, one of the things that this pandemic has done is really accelerated change. I think the change was going to occur no matter if we had a pandemic or not. But if the change was going to occur over a 10-year period, now it's occurring over a 2-year period. And so this whole acceleration is really impressive. And so one of the things that I think is happening is, you know, our markets are becoming more virtual. You know, more people are working from home. More people are working offsite. Everybody needs to increase efficiencies. Everybody needs to increase productivity because margins are getting tighter and tighter. I mean, you know, here we are facing a situation where, you know, supplies are difficult. Supply chains are stretched, and raw materials, products, everything is going up. And so the only way to deal with this is to increase efficiencies. And so I really do think that investing in technology as we move forward is going to be very, very important. And a lot of these companies in our market are small companies, small, medium-sized companies. So a trade association really plays an important part in getting the message out on where the future is going, and not that the trade association knows exactly where the future is going, but they do have the resources to monitor everything and to rapidly
communicate that knowledge,
that information to our market.
Yeah, well, I was lucky enough to see there was quite a big press release, wasn't there, about the merger of the two, or the collaboration of the two organizations, which was fascinating to read, actually. And also I was lucky enough through, you know, thank you to you for being able to see that virtual trade show, because that was quite special. And to see how successful something like that could be, because most people would just write it off as saying, no, that just won't work. Yeah, it looked a spectacular success.
Yes. And, you know, I think one of the things that we'll see in the future is say, well, okay, all trade shows are going to go virtual. That's not the case. People like to do business with people. People like to see people. They like to meet people. And a trade show whereby people are actually on the floor communicating is fantastic. But what I do think is that it'll be a hybrid situation whereby, well, you will have a trade show, an in-person trade show, but then you'll have that virtual component where, you know, there'll be people who can't go for whatever reason, or you'll have people who maybe their company are not investing in everybody to actually travel to visit that trade show. And so, you know, having that virtual component is very important. And another factor is that, you know, international travel and even domestic travel has gotten more and more expensive.
Well, plus also there's the general awareness of people saying, do we need to travel? Look at the damage we're causing by traveling. So you've got a behavioral change as well.
You mentioned that in the book. Mm. One of the things I really liked about your book, which I've never actually seen before, and I do a lot of reading. I have like I mentioned to you once, I have a book collection. Yeah. And one of the interesting things about your book was, you know, how at each chapter you would talk about the past, and then at the very end of the chapter, you would move to the present, which, you know, what you were doing in the pandemic, what the pandemic meant. And, you know, at one of the chapters, you know, you do mention that.
Mm. As you know, I do some keynote speaking, and one of the things that a lot of people say to me, I've had a question asked when it gets to Q&A, and they say, you talk a lot about the future, Jeff, so tell me, what do you think the future holds for us? And I then respond, and it comes across quite arrogant, although it's not intended to be, and I say, that's the easiest question I've ever been asked. And I then create a bit of a pause so everyone's wondering what I'm going to say. And I said, the answer is this: what do you want the future to be? Because what you want it to be is what it will become. It's not something that happens to you, it's something you create. So essentially it comes back to what is, you know, the most important thing to you, the people, the community, the planet, the country, whatever it is, that's the future you will forge. And and therefore, you know, that's the thing about entrepreneurs, it's the thing about great leadership. And that is, you know, the leadership for me culture is changing. Before, leadership and entrepreneurialism was all about making money for the benefit of making money. Now I'm seeing a major accelerated shift about the change of the question is not what can you do for me, it's what can I do for you. That's the leadership challenge. And it's now very much focused on the environment. It's very much focused on the future of our children, grandchildren, and great-grandchildren. It's focused on community and how do we make this a better world, rather than how much money can we earn to then decide what we do. So it's, for me, I've seen a massive, massive culture shift from a leadership perspective and an entrepreneurial perspective, which I find quite energizing. But we'll see how it folds. But of course, as you quite rightly say, David, the pandemic has created a reset. It's created a rethink. It's made everybody reflect and think, you know, what is it that really matters? And I think this happens throughout, you know, the spine of humanity. And I think it only leaves good things to come. And as you say, I think the acceleration we've seen in technology but more importantly, behavior. They say that the future that we will find ourselves in the next 5, 10, 15 years is about, you know, people that will be doing jobs that currently don't exist. You know, 55% will be about people and doing different roles. Only 25-30% will be driven by technology. And that's all about behavior. And of course, one thing, and I feel like I'm rabbiting on now, but one thing that is quite interesting to me as a subject is that when you look around at what you think the future may or may not be, it's about how we as individuals behave and the freedom that we are now given, or certainly in lots of areas we're given, and I think it will accelerate, where we decide how we decide to produce output, rather than someone saying, you sit at that desk at 8 o'clock and you leave at 5 o'clock and I'm hoping you'll give me a great output from those two, between those two times. And I think when you let people do it their way, we're seeing productivity go through the roof, yet people's stress levels are dropping and dropping and dropping. And that's what I find fascinating.
Very good. Absolutely. I agree with that. And the only thing I would add is that, you know, you really, as you see the as you look into the future and you decide what do you want it to be, you have to really focus on what you can control. And so, yeah, I would like it to be perfect where there's no poverty and no illness, but I can't control those things. So I'm not going to be focusing on something that I can't control. I would like to focus on that future, on things that I can control, or I can have an impact. Okay, I don't want to use that word control.
You can influence, yeah.
I can influence. Mm. That's right. Yeah. And so I think that helps me to be more of an effective leader.
Of course. And it's also about purpose, right? It's your personal vision, your personal purpose, the reason you're here and all the things that you can do. All right, David, listen, that's fantastic. So I'm going to now ask you a couple of questions.
Okay.
So the first question, and you can only give one example. You can't go off on a diatribe on this, right? So if I asked you this one question, what would your answer be? What would you say you are most grateful for?
Most grateful for? I'm most grateful for my family, no doubt about that. I'm grateful to be able to be in a position to be able to provide for my family. I'm grateful for the opportunity to see them grow in their different ways. I might not always agree with the way they're growing, but I'm grateful for the opportunity to see that growth. And I'm also grateful, you know, when I say family, obviously you say, well, he's talking about his wife and his two children. And then I'll say, yes, that's my principal family, but then it extends, you know, it's course, my extended family that I'm related to. It's my family that I'm not related to, my friends. It's my family here at work. And it just keeps going. It's my family that I've had the opportunity to meet in informal situations and formal situations like Vistage. And so it's just fun. I'm grateful for all that. I'm grateful to be a positive influence as much as possible to this family.
That's a great answer. And of course, it pivots around people again, right? That's the one thing that always seems to come right through at the center is people. Okay, here's your second question. If you had to give one message to the audience of this podcast, what would that one message be based upon your experience in life and career? What one message would you want to give out to this audience?
Well, I would say I want to be relevant. They say that a person never dies if they're always remembered. And I do want to be remembered that I help those around me to thrive. And so in that sense, I think it's important to be relevant. And the only way to be relevant is to really focus on what you can control and create an environment for those around you to thrive.
Yeah, great message. Fantastic message. Right, listen, David, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you this afternoon. We get to meet up again in the next couple of weeks anyway, which I always look forward to. And thank you so much for your time today and your incredible experiences, which have been fantastic. And I look forward to seeing you again soon.
Okay, thank you so much, Jeff. All the best to you and good luck.